Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Rex, I think we can go definitive on this one. That was one of the best U.S. Opens we have ever witnessed. Bryson DeChambeau collects his second U.S. Open title. That, of course, is headline 1A. Headline 1B is Rory McIlroy desperate for his first major championship in a decade. Bogeys three of his last four holes, including a missed four-footer on the last. Wow. The shots, the drama, the swings, the golf course, the day. Where is your head at this moment, Rex?
Well, first off, I have a partner in crime here that I'm potting next to. Hey, buddy. Mark Slayball from ESPN, so he's going to appreciate me yammering right next to him. Amazing finish. You're going to write DeChambeau. You're going to write the winner, and there's a lot of emotion there. There's a lot of subtext to unpack. I'm looking forward to reading your story. As per the norm, I'm writing the loser because I want to drink all of Rory McIlroy's tears. And I don't mean that in a bad way. Someone's going to come at me. No, of course, I don't do that. But there's also a lot of emotion with Rory, and he didn't speak with the media, and clearly he was upset when he sped away from Pinehurst. Two things. One, I would agree with you. That's one of the best opens in recent memory. I'd probably want to give it a little bit of time because of the recency bias before I claim it. The other half is it's probably the worst loss that Rory has taken. I want to say since Augusta.
Probably.
It's a good
probably
debate.
And I'm going to loss.
Well, if you consider where he was when he made the turn on Sunday at Augusta and he hits it left of left and things start to unravel. And I'm always curious where. Like, I really wish he would have stopped to talk because that would have been my question. Like, where does this rank? You've had some close.
You were going to ask Rory McIlroy after bogey three of the last four holes, including missing twice inside 5 feet. He had been perfect inside 5 feet for the previous 69 holes. Why'd those balloons just go? But then he missed two putts inside 5 feet over his last three holes. You were going to say, is this the worst loss of your career? Is this the most emotionally devastating you've ever been coming off a golf course? That's what you're going to ask?
I think painful was the word I was going to use. Was this the most painful loss of your career? I think it's a fair question. We're never going to find out now. Maybe on Tuesday when he talks to the media and travelers, I can workshop it and come up with maybe a better question. But it's got to be close, man. I mean, I know you want to do the recency bias thing and you're always a prisoner of the moment. However, I don't want to jump to that conclusion because in this particular case, it was a really, really hard golf course and everyone was making bogeys and there was a lot of mistakes to be made out there. And his came at a really bad time. As I pointed out, you're two up with five to play. You're Rory McIlroy. You think at that point, this is your best chance to win a major essentially in a decade, and to not be able to pull it off is shocking.
It's absolutely shocking. The reason, Rex, why I think this is quite easily the worst loss that Rory McIlroy has ever suffered is that was sort of a slow drip in 2011 at the Masters. He ended up shooting the 80 in the final round, blowing a four-shot lead, but like there wasn't any like definitive moment at the end. This was crippling. It was crushing. He was so close. I think back to last year, LACC, where he finished one shot shy of Wyndham Clark, also pretty dispiriting for Rory McIlroy, but he didn't really have the moment other than 14, that par five at LACC where he bogeyed. The last four holes, it was just like he just couldn't quite get it across the line and forced a two-hole aggregate playoff. In that press conference that day, I thought, boy, he looks pretty dispirited as well. But he said something along the lines of, I would go through 1,000 Sundays like this just to get my hands on another major championship trophy. Again, we do not know what was on Rory McIlroy's mind. He literally peeled out of the Champions parking lot, drove his Lexus, drive away. So we did not get a chance to talk with him. I would be shocked as well. I know you're going to the Travelers Championship in just a couple of days. I'd be shocked if he upholds that commitment and does play, particularly after he gets the full allotment of FedEx Cup points after finishing second here at the U.S. Open, since Bryson DeChambeau is not eligible to receive FedEx Cup points.
I think there's some other things going on next week, so maybe he's motivated to do that. We can touch on that a little bit later. But to your point, yeah, I can see him maybe not going up next week, maybe going up Tuesday and Wednesday and then withdrawing. I think a lot of players are probably going to do that. I don't want to shortchange Bryson,
however. No, I don't think we're shortchanging. I think there's two definitive stories that have come out of this.
Thankfully.
And the reason why I think it's important to start with Rory is that this is what we had been waiting for a decade. You and I talked about this on live from the U.S. Open very early Sunday morning, about 7 hours before the final group teed off. is that Roy has played so conservatively in these final rounds. And in the decade that he has gone without a major championship, what has really struck with me is that how few chances he's actually had to win. Like, you think back to last year's U.S. Open, you think back to the 2022 Open Championship, you think back to the 2021 U.S. Open, you think back to the 2018 Masters. That's really it. I might be missing one more over the past decade. But in all of those examples, Rex, he was too conservative in the final round, took a lot of putts. That was the exact opposite of what we saw Sunday at Pinehurst. He was making putts. He was playing pretty aggressively. He was bombing his driver without looking at it. He led the field in strokes gained tee to green. I would bargain a guess that this was one of the best strokes gained tee to green weeks he has ever had, certainly in a major championship. And the fact that he wasn't getting done, if he can't win this week with how well he struck it, with how well he mapped out his game plan, Rory has to be wondering, what exactly can I do to get across the line and get that fifth major championship?
That's pretty hard to unpack. I mean, and I'm not going to dole out excuses for him not speaking with the media. He should have stopped to speak with the media for a lot of different reasons, and not because he owes it to us or anything along those lines, because I really think that he needs to put this in context as far as, where does this ring? Is his mind in the idea? Because the idea I have for my column is, it's a fine line between hope and sort of hurt in this particular case. And I know there's going to be a lot of hurt, but I'm going to go back to what happened at the PGA Championship, where Bryson DeChambeau puts himself in contention and comes up just short. And he was clearly devastated on that Sunday. And Bryson talked about it tonight in his press conference, like that was a stepping stone. And in this particular case, maybe Rory just needs more stepping stones, or maybe you're right. Like, maybe this was his best chance to get it done.
That's Rory. Sloppy finish. Hoping we hear from him at the Travelers Championship. It's hard to wrap your mind around it, isn't it, Rex? I mean, he's two up with five holes to play. It ends up finishing one shot shy again of Bryson DeChambeau. This is the natural pivot. We now focus on the winner, who is one of the biggest names in the sport. He had a much maligned move to LIV Golf in early 22. He spent much of his press conference talking about sort of the low points that he was at and trying to build not just his life, but his game and his career as well. You had seen this building in 2024. Bryson DeChambeau played in mono groups at the Masters. He shot 20 under par, the lowest score to par of any non-winner in major championship history, just last month at the PGA Championship. And now he captures his second U.S. Open title I would say, a fashion, Rex, that wasn't necessarily built on his driving prowess, but was more his scrambling and his putting, particularly the 55-yard bunker shot on the 72nd hole that will go down as one of the best shots in major championship history. Where does your mind go immediately when it comes to Bryson and major number two?
Well, it goes back to the idea that he touched on it again tonight. Where was he 3 years ago? Back in, 2022 is probably the tipping point there. When you look at everything that was going on in his life and all the controversy swirling around him, you had whatever was going on between he and Brooks Koepka. It seemed more like bullying than a spat or a feud or a beef or whatever it is you want to call it. But he clearly was not in a good place. And he talked about, again tonight, the idea that he surrounded himself with better people. He put himself in a position where, instead of trying to, and I think the line I used today on live from, and try instead of trying to be the hammer that changes the game, that I'm going to forge a new path and everyone's going to follow me, to just allowing his golf to speak for itself. And he kind of became the Pied Piper out there today. You and I had a conversation last night, the idea being, is Bryson now more popular than Rory? And I wanted, and I never say this in any context, I really wanted a playoff tonight, just so we could get that two holes and see for itself, because they were separated by a hole, and going out there in the arena, it was kind of hard to tell, because plenty of people were for Rory, plenty of people were for Bryson. But I will say, and I think I conceded this point last night, that Bryson's stock has risen dramatically since 2022. Let's use that as the sort of the benchmark here. And Rory's stock has fallen a little bit. He's very much become a polarizing figure in the game. And I think, and I don't even want to do this in sort of the fog of celebration, but Bryson's also, he's learned that some of this is performative. Like, some of this I have to play to the crowd, because I'm sure he enjoyed himself. The crowd was behind him, but he has become a showman more so than anyone else in the game. And I think that's good for Bryson. And I also think it's really, really good for the game.
It's almost like he's taken Phil Mickelson's spot and the spotlight that he commanded in the golf world, just without all of the vices. You know what I mean? Like, it's harmless, it's goofy, it's a little bit silly. It's certainly social media savvy, which has become Bryson DeChambeau's brand. I'm stuck by a moment that I saw with Bryson DeChambeau on the range. He's warming up. He's wailing drivers. He has to swap out his driver head, actually. He said he flattened it. He has the curved crank driver head, which is like what the long drivers use. It's got a curved face. Anyway, he swaps that out, hits about five drivers, and then heads to the first tee. But on his way to the first tee, Rex, he's not locked in. He's not head down. He's not, just completely in the zone the way Roy McIlroy and Patrick Cantlay and even Matt Pavon to an Bryson went over to like the kids' autograph zone and was fist bumping all of them. He was walking along and high-fiving, fist bumping, taking selfies, signing autographs before making his way to the steps and heading his way first tee. I'm not sure I've ever seen that. It's rare. I can see why there is a skepticism, folks, who would say, hey, this seems a little bit too performative. Hey, this seems a little bit too dramatic. Hey, he's leaning into this act of fan friendliness a little bit too far. I genuinely think that Bryson is happy once again to be beloved, to be sort of feared by some of his peers, to be back among the spotlight. But I think more importantly, to have the fan adoration, which, if you recall, 3 years ago was very much not the case at all.
No, it wasn't. And that is a really good comp. I hadn't thought about Phil Mickelson. And so it kind of folds perfectly into where I landed on Phil Mickelson over the course of his career. Earlier in my career, there was a lot of talk. Was he genuine? Was Phil signing the autographs and being engaging with fans? Was that really who he was? Or was he playing to the crowd? Later in my career, I came to understand, didn't care. Maybe it was performative. Maybe it was the real guy inside. I don't know. I knew it was good for the game. So I'm going to go back to the same idea right now. Whatever it is that transformed Bryson, it's good for the game. You and I, anyone that was on property here today that watched him sort of put on that show, and part of it was a show, and part of it was just really, really good golf. Like, it's amazing when you think of how badly he drove the golf ball. Guys that drive the ball that badly on a Sunday to U.S. Open aren't supposed to win. If Bryson wants to, you know, to get evidence of that, just tell him to ask Phil Mickelson next week when they're at the LIV event. If you drive the ball that bad, you're not supposed to win. But the Bryson had the one thing that Phil clearly did not have when he lost that famous U.S. Open at Wingfoot. He had a really, really good short game this week, and he had a little bit of luck on his side. I don't think I saw him draw one bad lie when he hit it into the rough this week. Maybe there might be one 18. Out there that I'm going to get correct.
18 he did. The 72nd
well, 18 hole was a bad lie.
Messed up near a root, and he was kind of bending around the magnolia tree. And
but
had
he
to
could
just
advance
chop it, out
it.
Into that bunker. Sure.
But he was able to advance it and put it in a position where he could get it up and down. Phenomenal, all world. I think that shot should go down in the history of the U.S. Open as one of the greatest that we've ever seen. I just like the idea that he's embracing this role, not of being, you know, the antagonist. That's what he was before. Again, he wanted to change the game. He wanted to do it with a hammer. This is the right way to do it.
That role does not suit him. He is not a villain at heart. He wants to be loved. He wants to be admired. Yeah. He wants his gifts to shine through. And quite frankly, Rex, sports fans want to be a part of this. They want to feel as if athletes care about them and care about their support. You can say a lot of things about the current state of the PGA Tour. What you do not have are a bunch of performers. I think particularly with Justin Thomas's play sliding off, with Jordan Spieth's play sliding off as well. Like, Rory McIlroy is very much the star attraction of the PGA Tour. Bryson DeChambeau brings all sorts of other elements and is sort of attracting that younger demographic that the PGA Tour is so desperate to attract and to attain. And so when Bryson DeChambeau won, Rex, this U.S. Open title, and he does the trophy presentation and he's done taking pictures, he literally took the trophy and went and basically did a victory lap around 18 where fans could quote-unquote touch the U.S. Open trophy. Each and every one of them was, you know, taking Snapchats, taking pictures of it, taking selfies, and touching it as he went. Like, it was basically like a hero returning the trophy to his village. Like, it was crazy to see something I'd never seen before at a major championship. And he was eating it up. He absolutely loved it, and so did the fans, because Bryson DeChambeau was bringing them in. He was bringing them into the fold. It wasn't sort of just his achievement and his achievement alone. He made it known that this was so special to him because he was sharing it with tens of thousands of people.
And you started this conversation, but we kind of got away from it. And I do want to go back to the idea. I'm going through my mind, and I can't think of another major. Forget about U.S. Open. Just do major championships where you had this much drama that came down to the last hole, to the last putt, between these types of players. Because you're right. This is about as good as the game gets right now. I can't wait to see what the ratings are. Because you had – it only could have gotten better if they were paired together in the final round. Because you had both sides of the coin. Maybe you're a LIV guy. Maybe you're a PGA Tour guy. Didn't matter. You had every reason to watch, to be engaged with this, to find fandom somewhere in all of this. That's the amazing part to me. I don't know, at least in recent memory. I mean, certainly Tiger winning the Masters in 2019 is going to be an iconic moment. Certainly 2008, winning the U.S. Open for Tiger Woods on a broken leg. Like, we can keep going down them, but down the list. But from a pure competitive standpoint, I can't think of anything else. Are you muted?
I can't think of anything immediately that comes to mind, but I'm also dog tired and have a 2,000 word story that I need to write. You did bring it up, and I think it's worth asking, because it was the question we asked following Brooks Koepka's victory last year at the PGA Championship. What does Bryson DeChambeau's victory mean for the bigger picture of professional golf? The fact that a LIV player has won a major championship, he's now exempt from the majors for a number of years. There's all sorts of scuttlebutt about what could come out of a PGA Tour policy board meeting on Tuesday in Connecticut. What do you think it means in the grand scheme, Rex?
I thought it was funny. I was walking with a PGA Tour official, and we were on 17 watching Rory putt, and we heard sort of the cheers and let's go Rory, let's go PGA Tour even. And I turned to this official and I said, in 3 days? I said, none of this is going to matter. Like, I understand what was going on, and it was an interesting arena. And I love the subtext that this went beyond golf, that this went to the heart of sort of this divide in the game that's tore us apart for the last 3 years. And this was going to decide the fate of one way or the other. It's not. Because in 3 days, I think we're going to be in a much different spot. And we're going to look back at this and be like, what was all the fuss about? Like,
what do you mean? Really, what's happening in 3 days?
I think we talked about this the other day. I can't say it in front of Mark Schlabel from ESPN. That would be giving it away. But the policy board is meeting on Tuesday. It's supposed to be a 5-hour session. By all accounts, they're going to address what a possible deal with the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia would look like. The idea, and look, this is far from definitive, and we're going to have to wait to see where the way it plays out. But they're very, very close to a deal, at least for the financial terms. This isn't going to decide what professional golf is going to look like going forward, but it's going to essentially lay out the blueprint for the Public Investment Fund becoming minority investors in PGA Tour enterprises, essentially reuniting the game. Now, there's a lot of work to do after that. Like, how do we incorporate team golf into PGA Tour enterprises? How do you create a pathway back for those who left the PGA Tour and went to LIV? So there's plenty of work to still be done. But if this can be some sort of detente, that if this comes to pass and Wednesday delivers what we think it's going to deliver, we're going to kind of look back in this and be like, that's a little anticlimactic. Like, just 3 days ago, we were cheering and getting hoarse because we felt like this was going to be something that was important. Yeah, probably won't be, but it was still a really, really good finish to a really, really good tournament.
We will certainly be having a podcast on Wednesday, potentially emergency podcast, depending on the quality of the news that does come out and the player memo that we are anticipating on Wednesday morning. For his part, Rex, Bryson DeChambeau has been pushing a reunification of the game for about a year now. That's not to say that Bryson DeChambeau has sort of buyer's remorse and the move to LIV. I think he's quite happy with his reported nine-figure contract. But I think he also misses, again, the spotlight. He misses being a PGA Tour player and all that comes with it. Bryson has been pushing for a reunification of the game for the fans, bringing the best players back together again. He said, quote, I hope we can figure this out quickly, and I hope we can bridge the gap based on his U.S. Open victory. You have to think, I live in Ponte Vedra. Those watching the proceedings of this U.S. Open in Ponte Vedra had to be a little bit squeamish seeing the sight of Bryce DeChambeau, LIV golfer, in a LIV golfer shirt, wearing his Crusher's hat, putting his clubs away back into his Crusher's golf bag, winning a major championship that it will not be coming home to the PGA Tour. I think that's just the reality of the situation, that right now he's not a full-fledged PGA Tour member, and a potential deal pathway-wise is still far off.
And I didn't even read that much into it, because Brooks Koepka won the PGA Championship last year. We'd already sort of passed that threshold. We've seen the shocking
images. But Bryson is clearly the biggest draw in the sport right now. I think that was reinforced at the PGA Championship, where he was dazzling the crowd with his shot making and stirring the crowd into a frenzy. And I think it was even more solidified here as a two-time major champion at the U.S. Open, and outdueling Roy McIlroy head to head. If you are a PGA Tour executive, you want Bryson DeChambeau in your tournaments right now. He is absolutely a box office attraction, and for the foreseeable future, he will not be a PGA Tour player.
Well, and this goes to what you tried to say last night, and I did push back on the idea that you said that Bryson was the most popular player in the game, and I'm like, I don't know that to be true. Like, let's see it laid out. That's why I wanted to see them go head-to-head. That's why I wanted to see if there was going to be some sort of playoff. I was out there. You were out there. I didn't feel like there was a distinct difference between the two sides when the cheering comes. He is by far the most entertaining player in golf right now. I will concede you that. And you're right. If you're a PGA Tour tournament director, you 100% want him in your tournament. I think we're still a good ways away from that, but at least it seems like we've taken a step in the right direction. And to your previous point about what he wants to see in the game, the unification, I'm sure his heart's in the right place, but what he wants is to be in that arena that he just enjoyed. He wants to be in the center of the biggest events under the most glaring of lights, going head-to-head with the world's top players and coming out ahead.
Yeah, I just think it probably puts a little bit more pressure, a little bit more heat on PGA Tour leadership and the tournament directors who are struggling to attract fields if they're non-signature events or signature events, and those sponsors who are ponying up $20 million purses and not necessarily getting a return. If you have the most entertaining player in the game, he's not a PGA Tour player, get the deal done. As Bryson said, get it done quickly. That's Rory. That's Bryson. Rex, what other takeaways did you have from U.S. Open week? This is the first time we have had a U.S. Open at Pinehurst number 2 since 2014. It was certainly a more exhilarating tournament than Martin Keimer's eight-shot romp that year. 1999 obviously delivered. 2005 also delivered in a strange sort of way with Michael Campbell. How about Pinehurst as a U.S. Open venue moving forward, since it is one of the USGA's anchor sites?
I was talking with the CEO of the USGA, Mike Wan, this morning, and I brought up the idea that the staff, the team really did a fantastic job, because we talked a lot about it early in the week. This golf course could have easily gotten away from them, because it's Pinehurst number 2 on a good day, not hosting the U.S. Open is on the razor's edge. It would have been really, really easy for them not to put quite enough water on, pick a green, whatever green. I mean, you don't even have to be specific. It would have been easy for them to lean into a hole location that may have been on the tad unfair side, whatever your definition of that is. And by and large, they didn't do it. Look, PGA Tour players are not shy when it comes to criticism. And you and I both have talked to a lot of guys this week. I don't know that I heard one player blasting, being critical. I think Colin Morikawa said something about the consistency of the sand in the bunkers early in the week. But outside of that, I've heard absolutely nothing, and there were plenty of bad bounces. There were plenty of what you would define in any other tournament as bad breaks, and you just didn't get it. And you start to understand exactly why this is an anchor site. I mean, not only is it a perfect venue from a logistics standpoint, because we've seen 250,000 people move in and out of here this week with relative ease and go back to Valhalla. That was not the case there, but it's also such a perfect venue for a major championship. I don't know that they really needed to juice it up. You were here, humble brag, whatever many weeks ago, playing golf for media day. And even I think your comment then was, it wouldn't take a lot to get this U.S. Open ready.
No, it was amazing. Like that media day was probably 4 or 5 weeks ago at this point. And playing that golf course, yeah, it was a little bit soft. It rained the previous day. Yeah, the collars were a little bit furrier. But like, you drive around with a little bit of a haircut over a couple hours and you could host a U.S. Open the very next day. And I think that's exactly what Pinehurst number two has always prided itself on doing. You make a great point about the lack of player complaints this week. Like, I'm not sure we've ever had a U.S. Open in which there wasn't at least some sort of hand-wringing or kvetching. And when we talked on the preview podcast on Wednesday, we said that John Bodenhammer and Jeff Hall of the USGA have to absolutely bat 1,000 this week. There can't be one single hole location that becomes disastrous and guys are making doubles and triples and shooting themselves out of the golf tournament because they can't afford it, because it immediately puts a stain on the tournament if that is the hole that everyone remembers. And certainly there were some treacherous, difficult hole locations. You think about what happened on 13 on Saturday with both Ludvig Åberg and Tony Finau both making triple, but they made triple, Rex, because those players got out of position. It wasn't because it was goofy golf. It wasn't because it was silly and it was stacked up on a ridge. I mean, this golf course is such a stout test. And although the fairways may be wide, you need to find them, or it's a complete crapshoot. You need to play the right angles into the greens. You need to be incredibly crisp and precise with your approach play. And then I think as we saw with both Rory McIlroy and Bryson DeChambeau, who scrambled really well for the majority of this weekend, you have to have a really deft short game. I can't think of a single aspect of a player's game that was not tested at Pinehurst number two. Again, PGA Tour players who are conditioned to a very set golf course are probably not going to like the randomness that Pinehurst has. Some of the bounces,
week in, week out.
Some of the lies. You think of Rory's shot into the par 5 fifth on Sunday where it didn't carry quite far enough. You're probably looking 3-5 feet short of where it needed to be, and it rides the ridge, goes into the sandy area in a depression, ends up making bogey. Like, that's a little bit of a rub of the green, but Rory would be the first one, if he talked on Sunday, to say, look, shouldn't have put it there. I knew the risk. If I did not carry up on that ridge, if I was a little bit too far left, that was a possibility that could happen. I think Pinehurst number two was a fantastic U.S. Open test. Cannot wait to get back here in 5 years' time.
Well, and we just did the game of sort of jumping around trying to figure out, is it the best major ever? Is it the best major in recent history? I'm going to say it's the best major ever at Pinehurst, as much as 99 was special because of what Payne did there. Certainly, you go back to 2014. That was a dominant performance by Martin Keimer, but I'm not quite sure it was all that exciting. Even when Michael Campbell won, the excitement there is that Retief Goosen was about to become the greatest U.S. Open player of his generation and shot 80-something in the final round. So all of those tournaments were special for their own reason. This brought everything. It had it all. Like, again, it had the performances on the golf course. It had these wonderful up and downs, especially on Sunday afternoon. You had the subtext of LIV Golf and the PGA Tour going at each other head to head. I'm not quite sure we could have asked for anything else.
How do you put a wrap, Rex, on Scottie Scheffler's week as the world number one, the winner of 5 of his last 8 tournaments, on Tiger Woods' week, and what at least he said may or may not be his final U.S. Open appearance? What are sort of your other headlines as we wrap up the week here at Pinehurst number two?
And I think we've talked about it all week long. I mean, Scheffler genuinely surprised me. And when you look at what he had done coming into this, he was in a tier by himself. You and I have talked about this. And if we did tiers, if we were to steal that concept from ESPN, which we absolutely 100% should do, it was Scottie Scheffler and it was everyone else. I didn't expect him to come out and dominate and win by 8 strokes. I didn't think
you picked Rex. Our preview podcast on Wednesday was literally titled Scotty or the Field.
And I picked Scotty.
And you picked Scotty. I picked the Field. I picked it begrudgingly, but I picked the Field. Like, that is what we were talking about 5 days ago. And instead, Scottie Scheffler does not break par in a single round, makes just 4 birdies total. Birdies total the entire week and finishes outside the top 40. I mean, it's a completely shocking performance, but what conclusions are you drawing from it?
I think he was pretty clear talking about it. Probably shouldn't have played last week. I think a lot of players are going to say that. My guess is they take a long, hard look at the schedule and Memorial moves back to where it was. You need to have that week between Memorial and the U.S. Open because the Memorial is a U.S. Open light. And guys don't want to get beat up the week before they come into this particular championship because you're just going to get beat up again. It makes no sense. I think the other half of it is this golf course is so unique in the way they set it up. And he talked about it at length. Please pay attention to me this time, because you didn't last time when I tried to say this and you just parroted exactly what I said back to me. What he ended up doing is not being prepared when he hit into those wild sandy areas. He talked at length about it this week. He didn't feel like he had the preparation, the practice, and to be able to properly play out of that. Maybe nobody did, was kind of your point. I get what you're saying, but Scotty likes to be prepared more than anything else. He doesn't like to be surprised. He likes to stand over a shot and know exactly what it's going to do. He didn't have that comfort level here, and I think both of those are lessons he's going to take with him.
Yeah, I certainly think he got spooked a little bit by the sandy waste areas. This was one of his poorest driving performances of the entire year. That's the reason why he was made the cut on the number. Each time he got in there, he seemed a little bit unsure of what he was going to do. And then you couple that with the worst putting week that he has had in months, you know, pre-Bay Hill, where he was 70th out of a field of, I believe, 73 who made the cut in putting. Just to chalk it up to a completely lost week. He'll probably go out and win the Travelers Championship, but this U.S. Open was not to be. As it relates to Tiger, this is sad to say what we've come to expect. And as I leave this U.S. Open, you kind of just wonder, will anything change? Will he alter his preparation at all in 2025? I thought actually Pinehurst number two, given his skill set, given where he is, given the preparation, given actually how good he is starting to feel physically, represented his best chance to potentially contend at a major championship. That didn't happen either, and missed the cut by a handful of shots. Are you expecting anything different when we turn up in a month's time at Royal Troon as it relates to Tiger Woods?
We both did that in the same podcast. That's not good. Please understand, it's very, very loud in here. We're trying to do a lot of things. He sounded broken, Tiger did. I don't know if I've heard him sound that down in a long time. And I wrote it on Tuesday because I was doing a lot of mental gymnastics trying to come up with a way that, okay, this should be the one of the four majors he's going to play. Of the once a month he's going to play, and which on his calendar only has 4 months, this has to be the one where he does it. It's a relatively flat golf course. It was warm, hot even, and that's good for the body as we went through. And he had the perfect tee time. He had early, late, all that time to put himself back together again. There was a level of confidence, and man, he just didn't have anything. And when he talked on Friday, he was defeated. It was, I'm going to play one more time. It wasn't, I'm going to get ready to play one more time. It was, okay, I'm going to play one more time this season, then you'll see me when you see me. That did not strike me full of all kinds of
confidence. I'll come back, quote, I'll come back when I come back.
Thank you. I mean, that is not
dire.
The type of quote. Yes, it's not great. When he was asked about this possibly being his last U.S. Open, it's not going to be his last U.S. Open. They'll give him as many exemptions as he wants. Even that didn't come off very, very well. It may or may not be, was his response. He was maudlin. He was dark. It seems to me he was not in a great place when he left here. And I understand it, because this one, I think more so than maybe the PGA Championship and the Masters, he felt like he played better than he scored. And that to me is probably the most aggravating thing. It's one thing if you just play bad and I scored bad. I think he felt like he played better than the number on the card, and he wasn't even close to making the cut.
On the Wednesday podcast, we'll not just break down the any sort of PGA Tour future news, but we'll also spin it ahead to the next major championship. But final thought, Rex, how will you remember this 124th U.S. Open?
I mean, just one of the best shootouts, final round shootouts that, again, I can remember in recent memory between just two titans. And this is what we want. Like, look, it's great when you have, and I'm just going to pick a name out. It's great when you have a Michael Campbell win a major championship. Those are always fun to me because it's a life-changing event, and you kind of get into the personality of the person that won it. And look, Xander Schauffele winning the last month's PGA Championship. I thought that was a very cool story because he tried so hard, and you wondered, does he have what it took? And he was slowly becoming the best player without, and all of those conversations. But none of that, even the Masters with Scottie Scheffler, none of it had what today had. It was pure drama. It was pure theater on one of the best stages in all of golf with two of the best leading men. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, two of the best leading men. I would argue the two leading men in the world of golf right now, certainly from a draw standpoint, certainly from an entertainment standpoint. I will remember Bryson DeChambeau reasserting himself onto the world stage and winning, and I will certainly remember the most dispiriting loss of Roy McIlroy's career. Hopefully after 33 minutes of this podcast, you have come to my side that this was indeed the most crushing loss of Roy McIlroy's career. I'm fascinated to see where it goes from here. When I asked Bryson if he would empathize with what Rory is feeling at the moment, he said this would only fuel his fire moving forward. Royal Troon for the year's final major, the Open Championship, is now just 4 weeks away. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lab. You guys know the drill, mbcsports.com/golf. We're going to have plenty of content up on the site. Our blogger extraordinaire, Brently Romine, is cranking, slapping, and churning as we speak. Rex will have a deep dive on Roy McIlroy's failed performance and the close call once again at the U.S. Open. And I'm taking a deep dive. I mean, we're talking, we're going 5, 10, 15,000 feet deep in order to plumb the depths of Bryson DeChambeau's soul. You guys know the drill. You can cut that out either late Sunday night or early Monday morning. It has been a lot of fun bringing you these mini pods after each and every tournament round. We thank you guys so much for listening, all the comments, all the support. We'll be back on Wednesday again for a pseudo emergency podcast with tons of PGA Tour news to come. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days.
Bulldog's still going at it.
Adios, Bulldog.